For 3 days, Dixie called, and I said, pray again. Pray that I will not sleep. The pill will have no effect if it's going to keep me from being in his presence or hearing his voice. I had no idea what I was actually doing. All I knew was I felt like I would die if I couldn't have that. That was, nothing else mattered. That was the most important thing in the world to me. Those 3 nights that I took those pills, each night I had stomach cramps. And they got worse with each night. And I realized it was the pills. I didn't realize Yahweh was doing that too, because he didn't want me to have them. But 3 nights. 3 nights that I had to make a decision. Do I want him worse? Or do I want to sleep worse? Do I want release from that misery and that agony? So on the fourth morning, now I'm going back and tell you a deliverance he did during this period of time, but I'm going to just finish up with this doctor part first before I go back to that. That's an awesome thing. On the fourth morning, I woke up, and the first thing I was conscious of is I was just stretching in the bed. I have not been able to stretch in so many years because it hurt my back so. I learned a long time ago not to try that. My back, the pain in my back was excruciating, and the pain in my hips. I have for 15 years laid flat on my back to sleep. I had so much hip pain that I couldn't turn on either side. I slept flat on my back. And then after having the degenerative disc, my back would ache so, and I'd want to turn over so bad to get off it, and I couldn't. I just had to sleep that way. So I'm waking up. I've been asleep. And I'm waking up, and I'm stretching, and it hit me. And I froze, expecting that pain, and there was no pain. No pain. And I laid there, and I thought, my body feels funny. My body doesn't feel the same. What in the world happened? I'm not itching. I'm not hurting. My back's not hurting. My hips aren't hurting. Nothing's hurting. And I just laid there. I was thinking, if I get up, you know, it might start back. And it's not. And I just want to lie here and be this way. And then I realized my back felt so different. And I thought, what in the world is going on with my back? I felt strong. My back felt strong. And I started just kind of moving around a little bit more. And thought came to me, my goodness, feels like a kind of backbone of steel. I mean, I can't remember when I've ever felt like this. I got out of the bed, and I started walking to the bathroom. Nothing was hurting. A little minor residual itching here or there. Nothing that you would even think anything about. I went in the bathroom, and I looked at myself. And I could not believe my eyes. I had been healed overnight. My hips were healed. My back was healed. The poison ivy and all of the other places. The places that all of that bubble wrap stuff gone. It was just places on my body that just pink. I was expecting to be all scarred up. I didn't see any sign of any kind of scars forming. The places that looked like they were deep burns had big, big, thick rolls of dried skin rolled up on them. And I started just pulling them off. And it was just pink under there. I called my doctor's office and I said, I want you to put it on my record that I can't take that prescription medication anymore. so it will never be prescribed for anything because it causes stomach cramps. I said, but please tell my doctor. I was talking to the receptionist. I said, make a note. Tell my doctor not to call in a substitute. I do not need it. I'm fine. If I need anything, I'll call, and I'll be there to have my stitches removed from my appointment, and I'll because I still have the stitches, and I'll talk with her then. When I went in, the nurse said, this is okay with you, I'm just going to remove your stitches, and if you're okay, you can go. She said, you are okay, right? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. And I said, however, they did a biopsy. I want the results of that biopsy. She said, oh, I better look at your file. She opened my file. She said, oh, my goodness, I need to back up. There is a big note here that says, when you come in, do not let her leave until I see her and Dr. Smith will see her with me. She had told me that she was so concerned that when I came back to have my stitches out, if she was not very pleased with the way I looked, she was going to have Dr. Smith bring him in on my case, she said, because there's more here. And I forgot to tell you this. On top of all that mess, I broke out in the most horrifically horrible hives, if you've ever had hives. And then you put that on top of everything I was already dealing with. Then you know what I'm talking about. And I had the worst looking hives, and I had them all over the front and all over my back. And that's when I was going crazy and wanting to pull my hair out. And this is the thing that I knew Yahweh was behind everything. The medicine did nothing, but I literally would stand in that bathroom looking in that mirror, and right at the point, that I felt like I was losing my mind and I was going to start ripping my hair out, it would start to ease a little bit. And I was taken to that point, the point of my endurance, over and over, and then it would ease. Anyway, she said, the doctor said she has to see you, but the doctor's in surgery. She said, I'm just going to stick my head in the door and tell her you're here, you're fine, and I have taken your stitches out. Can you leave? In no time, my doctor and Dr. Smith were in that room. She was so sure that there were going to be further complications and I had some red disease or whatever going on, that she had already had Dr. Smith come in, view my file. They'd gone over everything together. And by the way, she told me that the hives I had were not your normal hives. That those hives, that particular kind of hives, only happen when you have an underlying problem, when you have something like the poison ivy, anything of that nature, and there is an underlying problem in the body, and that kicks it up a notch, and the hives can manifest this way. She even showed them to me in a book. They had a different name, and that's what it said about it. There has to be an underlying problem, and Dr. Smith agreed with her on that. He came in to see me, and while we were standing there, she was standing there, and she said, you're fine. I said, I am fine. She said, you're really fine? Yes, I'm fine. And she said, do you mind if we look at you? I'd like Dr. Smith to see you. And I said, no, I don't mind. So I showed them my body. And when I showed them my body, when I exposed my body, she literally gasped. She said, she could not believe her eyes. And they stood there looking at me, and they asked me if they could touch my skin because they could not believe there was no scarring. It was just a little bit pink in those places. All over, the hives were gone. And they talked about the fact, I cannot believe there's no scarring. I don't know what happened. I don't understand any of this. It's a puzzle to me. And I said, yeah. And do you remember what it looked like? And she said, do I remember? I've got the pictures in my file. And she pulled out color pictures she had blown up That's how sure she was they were going to have to do some real extensive testing and diagnosis and stuff. And then it was my turn to gasp when I looked at those pictures. The horror of that. It was like I'd already forgotten just how bad it was. And so I gasped, and I said, oh, my goodness. She said, I'm sorry, I'll put those up. And she put them back in the file. And she said, and then they gave me this talk about you cannot ever afford what this has done to my body, the trauma it's put it through, and you can't ever afford to get poisoned again, and you have to tell your husband, blah, 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 and you have to do this and this and this, and if anything ever manifests again, you get here right away, we'll see you anytime, all this mess. And then Dr. Smith said, when did you start to improve? And I said, well, so I was trying, I was thinking about that, because I, you know, the date. And she says, wait a minute. I have the timeline right here in my file. And she opened the file, and she said, I gave you a prescription, that prescription so you could sleep, and and here's the note. You called in after 3 days. You took it 3 days. On the fourth day, you called in and said you'd taken it 3 days. You were not taking it anymore, but you were fine. Soon as she said that, I knew what had happened. I didn't understand it before. I had no idea. 3 days of crucifying the flesh. 3 days when I made the decision I'd rather put up with this agony than not to have your presence or to hear your voice. That was the decision that he wanted me to make. And I didn't realize that. I didn't even realize what was happening in the spirit. I was in the grave for 3 days. And I came out on the fourth day healed. Not just that mess, but my back and my hips. Yes, hallelujah. Hallelujah. What a difference in my life. Now, let me go back and tell you what Yahweh was doing through this. When it started to manifest at first, I was saying, Robert, look at this, look at this, look how horrible it is. And then it started getting worse and worse and more on my body, and I became ashamed of the way I looked because I had that shame-based nature. And I began to hide myself from him. I'd go in the bathroom and shut the door. I wouldn't change clothes in front of him, or if I was going in to take a shower or anything, I'd close that door. And all I could think about is if he sees my body looking this horrible, that image is always going to be in his mind. And even when I'm healed, and I was really afraid I was going to have scars, but I was thinking, being a person with a shame-based nature, I was thinking, you know, he'll probably never desire me again, and always going to pitch me this way, and you know, and just hanging my head and hiding. And one night, I did this for several nights. I'd go and look at myself during when it was so bad, and I would be thinking like that. And one night, I did that. And Yeshua walked in that room. He stepped in the bathroom with me. I didn't see him physically, but I felt his presence. And he spoke to me, and he said, I am your husband too, and what you've seen that has been hidden has never been hidden from me. I never shunned you, I never rejected you, and I never will. I love you. And then he touched my face. I felt his touch on both sides of my face, and he lifted my head up. When he lifted my head up, the scriptures came to my mind about he is the lifter of my head. He will give double recompense for my former shame. Those scriptures just came through my mind. But I'm telling you, when he lifted my head, and I had his approval, and he said, I've seen it all along, It's never been hidden from me, and I've never shunned you, and I've never rejected you, and I never will, because I love you. I didn't care what anybody else thought of me ever again. I knew I would never feel shame again. I was delivered instantly of that stronghold of shame. And only his opinion matters. I could care less. That spirit will never have access to me again, ever. And I began to think, you know, whatever I have to go through, it's worth it for this. It's worth it. I wasn't expecting anything more. I wasn't even expecting him to heal all that other. This happened before that. And if nothing else had happened, it would have been enough. I had no idea that he had in mind to heal me completely, that he had in mind to bring me to that brink where I had to make a decision of how important his presence and his voice was to me. I didn't know about entering into his suffering. I had an opportunity before, and I failed that test. Can't go into that one that happened in Israel. I had an opportunity. When you fail a test, you get to take it over. And it took, because I failed that one. He worked with me. He's loved me for over a year longer, adding more strength so I would have the strength to stand what I was going to go through to receive this healing. He told me it was a message for the body. That we're so close to the end time. And I'm not the only one like this. I'm not the only one carrying a bunch of junk inside. The body's full of it. When I was talking to a friend of mine and telling her about this, giving her this testimony, and I started to say, what I was going to say is, I just wish it could have happened many years ago. And I said, I just wish he would not let me speak. He silenced me. He would not let me finish that sentence. My mouth is just hanging open and I can't speak. And she's just looking at me. And then, in a little bit, I said, June, he wouldn't let me say it. He silenced me. He would not let me say it. And it hit both of us at the same time. This is the appointed time. This is the appointed time, not just for me, for all of us. If this was the appointed time for me and he said it's a message for the body, then that means it's the appointed time for the body. That means if you were in that condition or there, if you have something that you don't even, you know something's holding you back. Now, there might be some people that are holding on to things, and they know it, and they're doing it anyway because it just feels good or it's hard to give up or whatever. Then you need to give it up. It's getting serious, folks. It's time to get rid of this mess. Or you might be like me, and doing everything you knew to do, trying so hard, loving him with all your heart, and you just don't know what it is. Something's holding you back. He wants to reveal that. He wants to clean it up, clean it out. It makes me sick to think about me carrying that mess in me, because that's dark areas. I had demonic strongholds because of unhealed wounds. And I did everything I knew to do. I prayed forgiving everybody that ever wounded me. I prayed asking forgiveness for everybody, and that's another step. He took me a step further. He said, you don't stop here. He said, I want you to look around at the people you know, your family and your friends, and I want you to think about, what do they look like inside? What are they carrying? And how many of those wounds did you put there? Now I'm going to tell you, that's a moment to wake you up. Because after what I went through and after seeing what I look like, God forgive me for anybody I wounded like that. Makes me sick to think about it. Made me sick to think about I caused wounds that maybe demonic forces were able to attach to and actually cause strongholds in their lives. And there's not a one of us that hasn't done it. We've all wounded people. We've been wounded, and we've wounded others. One of the books that he had me read was the Song of Solomon. Never understood that book. Until then, I've read it 3 times, and that's only the beginning. I was absolutely fascinated when I understood that it is the journey of the bride. I never could make sense out of it. And as I read that book, he started to teach me and show me myself in that journey. And obstacles that had stopped me at certain places for so long in that journey. I wanted to serve him so badly. I got to the place where it talked about, you know, feasting in with him and supping with him. You go into the banquet hall and you enjoy his company and enjoying his presence. And I did a lot of that in my home. I heard his voice. Heard him speak, felt his presence, and I loved it, but he had a hard time getting me to leave there to go do anything with him, to go in the field and work, because I was under so much bondage. I stayed there because it was safe. If I went out, somebody was going to hurt me, somebody was going to reject me, somebody was going to abandon me, and I had big walls up. I was going to protect myself. I wasn't going to let that happen to me. Well, I'm telling you, when I was healed, when I got up that morning, my mind didn't think the same. I didn't even understand what was happening. I didn't understand what all he had done. I didn't understand all the things I'd been delivered of. And I would think about things like, I never wanted to stay to eat after Torah study. You get too close to people that way. You get to know people, they get to know you. Get socialized. Just let me come in, get my teaching, and run home. And I would complain, Robert, do we have to stay? And Robert's real social, and he loved to stay. And above all else, Robert loves food. It's food! Okay, so it's food. Robert wants to be there. And I was like, well, I'm not staying every week. You know, we'll stay sometime and not stay sometime. We'll please both of us. But I ended up staying more than not, but always trying to hold people at arm's length. Don't let them get too close. Don't let them see all the mess in me. Don't want to get hurt again, blah, blah, blah. And let me tell you something now. There's nothing I'd rather do than be in the middle of you all. I want to hug you. I want to tell you I love you. I want to be with you. I went camping. Can you believe that? And loved it. I have never been able to do anything like that, ever. Wouldn't have even considered it. And I went, and I loved it, and I wanted to be with you, and I wanted to be in the middle of you, and I didn't want to go home. That's unbelievable. That's just a little bit of the difference in my life. I love fixing food now. I didn't want to do that. Didn't want to do any of that. I love fixing that food to bring. I love being with you. I love coming. Okay. Back to the journey of the bride. He showed me all kinds of things, and he taught me things. And one thing that I just kept coming to my attention was all of the things, because this book, after 20 years of research of when he would bestow all these compliments on this bride, dove's eyes and a neck like the Tower of David and cheeks like pomegranates, all of these different things. Okay, this guy researched all of that in the Bible, everywhere those words were used, what they meant, what they represented. And it was the most amazing thing to me because when you understand what he's really saying to the bride, and you understand that with that Shulamite, just like us, when that Shulamite started out, he starts out with all these compliments. All of these things he's saying about her are not real yet in her life. He's prophesying that into her life. This is where he wants her to become. At that time, she's complaining. She's having a pity party. Whoa, I've been there. Did a lot of that in my life. But she's complaining. She's blaming her brothers for having to be out there. She's, you know, didn't want to be, have that suntan she had and blah, 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 just like we do, all the complaints, things. But he's still speaking all that. And he's saying things like, you have dove's eyes. Well, that really got my attention, because dove's eyes are eyes that look straight ahead. A dove and an eagle are the only two birds that look straight over their beak. All other birds turn their head side to side to see. I didn't even realize that. And I had such a longing in me to have dove's eyes. Set my face like flint toward him and not look to the right or to the left. Listen to that voice behind me directing me to go to the right or left. And that desire in my heart grew and grew and grew. And he began to talk to me about that, and about that's what he needs from the bride, and that we do too much looking around. We even focus too much attention on the enemy. And anytime we're looking at the enemy, our eyes are off him. Reminded me of all the times that I've been in church, and we would sing that song, going to the enemy's camp, take back what he stole from me, and everybody get all emotional, and they're stomping on the devil, and they're making a big show of all this kind of stuff. I was there in that condition, the condition I just described, and I'm up there just doing it too, and getting all this feel-good stuff, all this emotionalism, and stomping, and oh, we're really doing something here. And going home and nothing changed. There's no power in it. It's just emotionalism. The power is keeping your eyes on him. We fight with a two-edged sword. We fight with the word. Yeshua is our example. You didn't see him doing that kind of stuff. You saw him keeping his eyes on the Father, doing only what the Father said, and using the word. When Satan came and tempted him, use the word. And that's what we're supposed to be doing. And I'm not going to be able to say nearly what I would like to say about this journey, but there are so many things, such as we're holding on to junk. We have fear in our lives that's holding us back. We have strongholds. We have junk. And this is what he said. I need the bride without spot or wrinkle now, not a day before I return. We're his army. We're the army. We're the ones he's supposed to use in the end times. All of the things that are said about what's going to happen in the end times, doing things greater than Yeshua did, all of this, we're not seeing that. We're not going to see that as long as we're carrying this mess. We have to let him heal us. We have to let him deliver us. We have to lay down the things we know about and ask him about the things we don't know about. So all of those dark areas can be filled with light, and we can be empowered. You know, we do a lot of praying for people, and sometimes we see wonderful results, like we're seeing with Joe with his healing miraculously. You see what's happened with me. But there are a lot of times we lay hands on people and nothing happens. We're not walking close enough with him. His love is awesome. And his love will heal. And he wants a body that's cleaned out and his love can pour through. So if he wants to touch somebody and he wants to heal them, because this is the thing, we're so messed up. We're so messed up. He can't say, Marilyn, go and lay your hand on that young man. There's some things in there that need healing. And I want to work through your hand. That's going to be my hand. My hand. It's going to be my power that touches him. We're so messed up, we don't even hear that. Don't even hear it. Or if we hear it, there's so much junk in us that love that heals can't flow through there. He wants us where we can do his work on this earth. We are his hands, we're his feet, we're his mouth. And look how we use all those things. Who's going to do these things? Who's he going to work through? Well, I want him to work through me. I want him to work through all of us. And that's what all of this is about. This is the time, not a day before his return. What good have we done him? Yes, we barely make it there. But it's all about him. It's never been about us. It's never going to be. It's about him. It's his love that desires us to be his bride. And it draws us. It draws us. But you know, we're not supposed to be a bride that is so self-centered that all we're concerned about is if I make it. Let me be that bride without spot or wrinkle. We're supposed to take every bride with us we can. We're supposed to help each other, lift each other up, help each other come out of the hard places and the bondage, give testimonies that encourage, show his power. And I know I meant to time myself, Josh. I'm sorry I didn't, but I know I have to stop. So I'm going to turn this over to you. I want to leave you with this thought. I thought I knew how much he loved me. I didn't know, have a clue. His love alone will set you free. Hard to stop. I'm going to give you this mic.